Welcome to the show. Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know that this is something I recorded back in January, before we had all of this COVID-19 stuff going on. I chose to publish this as it is and didn't change anything about the overall message of the episode. I'm doing this because it reminded me of a time when I was curious about so much more in the world than just coronavirus. And it gives me some hope and some excitement that you and I will have that world again once we're through our pandemic. So here we go. I hope this is something that you can enjoy and that potentially takes your mind off of things wherever you're locked down.
I've got a great episode for you today. In my life, I've been really fortunate to meet super talented people, and oftentimes I literally stare in awe when they're at the helm of their craft. You can ask them, they've seen it, it's uncomfortable. I realize that nothing ever really happens by accident, and that none of them are suddenly gifted one day, but they all practiced a ton. And what's more, the level of their talent leads to incredible aspirations and thought-provoking endeavors. Rarely do you see a super skilled person who is just contented. More often they're wondering, what can I do next, and how big can this be? I always forget that there's no real ceiling, just the person-made ones. So with that, I'll stop waxing poetic and let my guest do that for me. I hope you enjoy this episode as I talk to my buddy Joe Wheeler about his music tastes.
What up, Joe?
What up, Shake?
How's it going?
Good. Good to be here, man.
Before we get started, I'm really excited about the episode. However, let's just hear a bit about you. Where are you from? Where'd you go to school? What are you doing?
Sure. So I'm from Eugene, Oregon, home of the Ducks. So shout out to all the Duck fans out there. Rose Bowl champs this year. And I am now living in London. Been here for about a year and a half doing a master's degree.
Go Ducks.
Go Ducks.
I actually can't say that. I'm sorry. I'm not a Ducks fan. But
I appreciate it nonetheless.
I am a Ohio State Buckeyes and a Northwestern Wildcats guy. And unfortunately, neither of those teams had great postseasons. But
yeah,
it's cool. No worries. We've got the boring stuff out of the way, so I want to get to it. I'm going to ask you one of my everyday simple questions that has been running through these shows. So are you ready?
Yes, absolutely.
What kind of music do you listen to?
I would say there are two different qualities in music that I gravitate towards. And the words I would use to describe those qualities are dreamy and soulful. So on the dreamy side, my favorite band is Animal Collective. Have you heard them before?
I have, actually.
So very heady, experimental. I also love Radiohead. I like a lot of acoustic music, like Mac DeMarco, Nick Drake, Kings of Convenience. And then on the soulful side, I think one of the reasons why I love hip-hop is that there's a very strong social message in the music. So I listen to a lot of artists that I think have something deep and very important to say, like Lauryn Hill, Tupac, Kendrick Lamar, Immortal Technique. I would say like my musical tastes span a lot of different genres, but those are the types of things that really move me when I listen to music.
So I'm going to say that you seem to know a lot about music, and I'm always like mildly suspicious of people who have such detailed answers. It's kind of like you're hiding something. How did you become such a fan of music such that you can rattle off that amount of information?
Well, I grew up in a really musical household. So my dad was an amazing guitar player, and he wrote books about musical instruments, in particular about the history of guitars and how they've influenced our culture. So I grew up in a house where we had a piano in the living room. You know, we had guitars kind of lying around the living room. And I've had a love affair with music since I was a little kid. You know, I remember being 9, 10 years old and saving up my weekly allowance to go to the CD store. And then I used to sit there with the old Discman player and my headphones, just listening to Will Smith and the Beastie Boys and the things that I liked as a 9-year-old over and over again.
Is everybody's first album Will Smith?
I think so. I think for like kids that, you know, I was born in 89, grew up in the 90s. I think that like for 90s kids, Big Willie Style was a common first album.
That was my first album.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think around that time, downloading services like Napster, LimeWire, you know, my older brother Dan was using Audio Galaxy, became really common. and he made an underground hip hop mixtape for me. And when I heard that, it was like my mind was blown, you know, hearing all of these artists, Dilated Peoples, Hieroglyphics, Souls of Mischief. That was when hip hop became something that I decided would be like a very, very big piece of my life.
Do you play music? Do you sing? Like, how do you, a lot of people love music. I don't think everybody takes part in the creation of music. So do you do anything?
I do. Yeah. I played a lot of guitar as a teenager. And I like to dabble on keys and on drums whenever they're around. And I do love singing. I think people who are close to me know how much I love karaoke.
I don't know what you're talking about. I've never been on stage with you doing karaoke in December in Dublin.
And yeah, singing is something that in the past I felt self-conscious about, but recently I've been trying to do more of and incorporate more into my music.
You say your music, so you're clearly hiding something else. Like, what else do you do?
So recently, I've been trying to hone my craft as a rapper and get a sense of what my identity is as an artist and what I can contribute to hip-hop as a genre. Because I think in hip-hop, it's really important that you are your authentic self in the way that you make music, in the words you use, in how you dress, and how you present yourself. Because if you're mimicking somebody else's style, then I think the listener is going to know that. And it's also not really true to what the culture of hip hop is all about.
So you rap, you like spit rhymes, you're lyrically gifted, you're a student of the game.
I hope so. I feel passionately about it.
Can I ask a question about rap music before we continue with you?
Definitely.
What are your thoughts on the pervasive style now, which is, you know, Panda and like a little bit of like the repetitive, not really lyrically gifted, but sort of beat stuff that came out, rise out of like the TikTok atmosphere?
In my opinion, you could almost break it off into a different genre, because I think rap music can serve a lot of different purposes. It can educate people. It can make people think. It can make people dance. And I think that what the style you're describing is more the latter. Like, that stuff is fun to hear when you go into a club. It's fun to play in your car. And at the same time, in my opinion, you have some of the best lyricists ever who are out right now. I would put Kendrick Lamar in that category. I'd put Earl Sweatshirt in that category. And to call them the same genre, I mean, sonically, lyrically, they're totally different. So I'm not mad at it. Like, I'm definitely not an elitist when it comes to rap. I listen to both. I really like Future. I like Young Thug. But to me, it like serves a different part of my life.
It's a very political answer. I appreciate that. There's a lot of people who have a very get-off-my-lawn mentality about rap.
Yeah.
Where what they had in the 90s and 2000s, that is pure hip-hop. And then what is now is loud noise. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that you have a good beat on the fact that like there's purpose to it all. Because in the end, if it's enjoyable, it doesn't have to be sad to listen to it. You don't have to feel ashamed to listen to it.
Totally. And it's all art in its own right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So back to you. How did you even begin to start rapping? Like, that's not a skill set that everybody gets. And, you know, from your background, it's not like you were, you know, living up on the streets in New York where hip hop started. You're from Oregon. Like, where did the skill come from?
Well, when I was a kid, I went to a lot of hip hop shows. And I remember thinking that freestyling was the coolest thing in the world to me. I had always just dreamed of being able to do it. So what better way to start than just to start doing it, right? Like, I started rapping at parties and at open mics. It was just fun. And my friends were really into hip hop too and liked to do it as well. Where I got the most practice performing in front of crowds was actually through battling. So there's a freestyle battle in Oakland called Tourette's Without Regrets. It's been going for more than 15 years. And it was my friend Simone Stalzoff, who's a poet, and he had performed at this event before. And he really encouraged me to get up on stage. I probably wouldn't have done it without his influence, to be honest. And once I started going, I kind of got to know the community there a little bit. So, you know, shouts out to Be Nasty, Frack, Cam, Robo, all the Tourette's Without Regrets people. And there was an event that they hosted, which was the 15-year anniversary since they started the battles. And I went and I competed and I ended up winning a battle against a guy called Tantrum, who for people who are into like West Coast battle rap, this dude's kind of a legend.
Mm-hmm.
And my teenage self would have been really proud of my my older self, because like Tantrum's a dude I really look up to, and that was a huge confidence builder for me.
I've met like a couple people in my life that can freestyle. Every single one of them shows just some innate ability to bring up words that rhyme quickly. Mm-hmm. Every time I do it, I might get like three lines in, and then I hit a real obvious wall. So learning, you're practicing, but really your like secret here is battling. Like that was maybe the thing that forced you to just get really into this thing to the point where if I'm on stage, I can't mess this up.
Exactly. Like part of it is just the adrenaline of having hundreds of people there watching you. And I think that pushes you to really like elevate to the next level. And when you're freestyling, you can't really afford to second guess yourself. So it's like if you make a mistake, you turn that into a punchline. And that just requires time and practice, I think, like any other skill set.
Okay, here's the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
Can you freestyle for us right now? If I give you a beat here and we play it for everybody, you think you could give us something?
Let's do it, man.
Okay.
I'm ready.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is Joe Wheeler with a bit of freestyle.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Can we turn the beat up just a little bit?
It's actually...
Nujabes, rest in peace. That's cool. Look. Check it out, can't play the beat louder, but I'm a rap off the top, say something profounder. I just gotta find a way that I can start with it, cause I bring the light to this mic like a spark with it. Check it out, young gifted dude, 6'4", skinny dude. Every time I rap, I find something that I can ridicule, like the president and other things in society. I just do this podcast with Shake for notoriety. The problem with these rappers is there's really no variety. And if you wanna battle me, I'm saying come and try me. But I say battle, but I'm all about love. I'm all about everything that exists all above. That's why I dropped an album and I call that shit the afterlife. Cause honestly, these rappers really, yo, they half as nice. And I could rap even in the afterlife, it's endless. Remember this, I sever this like Severus Snape. Forever I'm great. I try to say something that the listeners can take and bring with them. And I aspire to be an artist to bring wisdom. And I don't want to fight people cause I stand with them. Stand with my brothers and I stand with my sisters. And I stand with the dark times that bring ourselves blisters. And I'm rapping hot like sunspots. I just want to do this off the top and giving you like one thought that you can take forever though. Rap music's something that I treasure though, forever though, inevitable. That I break it down, astounding, well-rounded, plus profound all at the same time. Like I got two different brains at the same mind. Break it down, and if you want status, you can take mine. Cause I don't really care about money, don't care about wealth, don't care about anything except my health.
Incredible. I never tire of hearing that from you. I'm so happy you could do that. I'm going to put the whole thing at the end of the episode for people who want to give it the full listen. And I'm going to have to link them to your stuff, obviously, because it's so much fun to see you do that. And
I appreciate that. That's love.
Honestly, to everybody listening, it's not the first time. And you actually did like this incredible freestyle at my leaving do back in SF. And I remember we were just sitting there and my buddy Kevin sitting in the back, whose brother was on this podcast as well. He was just sitting there like losing his absolute mind because he's a dude who's just like, I didn't realize that people could put those words together in that way. So thank you for that.
Thank you. It's a privilege, man.
And it's an incredible talent. I want to talk to you about this though. So I have this sensation that I've realized in people who are talented in things that aren't just your everyday work related items, your 9-to-5s. And I think that I've got a beat on it. When you have a skill that you've been honing for a bit, it's rare that you find yourself at a point where you're like, I'm good and I'm done. You haven't hit any sort of ceiling. You're always kind of looking for that next thing. You have your endeavor to build more and make more.
Mm-hmm.
So with this, what do you want to achieve? What do you have out? What can we listen to?
The past year for me, it was a challenging one, and making music was a way for me to turn that challenge into something positive. So I put in a short album, a little 4-track EP out on New Year's Day called The Afterlife. It's available on Spotify, YouTube, iTunes, all the major platforms. And it's a very personal, kind of reflective little selection of songs. And I wanted to put it out for something for people to enjoy, but also as a fundraiser. So if you like the music, you can make a donation to Rethink Mental Illness, which is one of the biggest providers of mental health services here in the UK. And I wanted to do that as a way of kind of showing solidarity for people who are going through a hard time, and just to say that, like, you know, you're not alone and everybody goes through it at some point in life and it's totally okay.
What was the endeavor or I guess the catalyst that made that your message?
So I think the catalyst was sort of like, to me, these songs represent hard times, but also overcoming them. I've had a ton of support in my life and people that I can lean to. And I recognize the fact that not everybody has that, which is why I think taking the stigma away from mental health is such an important thing. And just being like, even when you're low, even when you're darkest time, like, we got you. It's cool.
So I listened to the EP when it came out. And I have to say it was very lyrical. It reminds me of the old songs I would listen to from like Lupe back in the day when he was, you know, really, really thoughtful, you know, Dumb It Down as a track of his.
Yeah.
Deep thoughts, clever rhymes, that kind of move, which I really appreciate it. I'll link it for everybody so they can get in and listen and donate. How did it come together? Like, how do you put an EP together?
For me, the first thing was finding the beats. So there's a website called beatstars.net. And it's basically a matchmaking service between producers and rappers. And I found a producer there out of Sweden who goes by Misery. And I heard those beats and just loved them. Kind of like I was saying before, like I gravitate towards music that's dreamy and soulful. And I found his beats to be really, really those things. And then I was like, I'm living here in London. I'm a student. So don't have as much free time as I'd like. But whenever I sort of felt inspired to write a rhyme, I would sit down, I would put those beats on and just kind of see what comes out. And then I kept what I thought were the four best songs that sort of fit together cohesively and were thematically similar. The album's called The Afterlife because it's, you know, it's a lot about like the loss of my dad and kind of musings on religion and what happens next and this kind of stuff. And then I was in Los Angeles just over the winter holiday and saw my friend, my brother, Peter Fenn. A guy who I've known for many years, used to work with, have made a lot of music with. And I mean, he's really a wizard in the recording studio. So we recorded everything in one day and he's there like editing all the sound and putting effects on stuff. And he also sings on the track Happy Hour. So shouts out to Peter Fenn. He's a really talented artist too. You guys should check out his stuff.
Yeah. Shout out to Peter. I remember him.
Yeah.
Good guy.
He's a good dude. The best. And from there, like, because of web services, distribution and mastering is, like, really easy now. So I used a site called Lander to master it. I use CD Baby, which is where you pay a fee, and then they put your music out on Spotify and all the rest. And it takes, like, a week, and then you're good to go. You get it copyrighted and everything like that.
The four tracks on your album, Ode to the Missionaries, Snow in Tallinn, Happy Hour, and Fur Dad. In like the people that listen to your music, your friends, your family, and then everybody else who discovers it, what is the message that you want them to know about Joe Wheeler? Overall idea, yeah, I totally get the importance of the mental health message that I'm getting there. I know you, so I can kind of sense more, and we've talked about it. But for someone in New York who's never met you, who listens, what do you want them to know about you?
My goal was to make the song so personal that they actually resonate on a more universal level. And for me personally, I've always been a very existentially challenged person, I think you could say. I grew up in Eugene, which is more or less a very atheistic town. And I think religion is heavily stigmatized. And I've always sort of rejected that stigma because I do believe in the value that religion can serve in people's lives and of having a spiritual practice of some sort. And then on the other hand, I wrote Ode to the Missionaries when two teenage missionaries on the streets in London told me that I was going to go to hell for not accepting Christ as my Lord and Savior. To answer your question, like, I think what I want people to know about me is that I fluctuate between these dualities of like, there is God, there is no God. And my message to everyone is, it's all good. Like, whatever you want to believe, it's cool, because the truth is that there are things that human beings don't know. And I think we should be humbled in that.
I will say I have met such missionaries on the streets of London and elsewhere. But I love that message too, because it's what I try to tell people. You'll come into a world now where saying you're an atheist is sort of like the norm, especially in our generation of people.
Yeah.
And oftentimes people freak out or at least a little confused when you say that you follow any sort of religion, even if it's an actual specific one. Like, you know, I still practice a lot of Hinduism. I dabble in a lot of Buddhism. I'm a student of that game where I just like love to read and learn and understand. But in the end, the whole point of it is like, I'm not trying to attribute to anything. I'm trying to say,
how can I just be a good person and make sure that all this knowledge that humans have put together through good and bad resonates a little bit in just my life.
Exactly. Yeah, I can really relate to that.
Okay, the EP's out. We're trying to raise some money here.
Yep.
What's a big picture goal? I mean, there's the obvious one, get you signed, we get you on a yacht, we have you throwing money around. I'm assuming that's probably not the move that you'd go to, though if I set it up for you, you'd be hard-pressed to say no.
Yeah, the goal is to be Jay-Z.
Yes, yeah. Well, yeah. From other things that we've talked about, what would you like to do in rap that you think could make an impact?
I think part of the goal is to get that message that I was just talking about, that there's a multiplicity of ways of seeing the world and of belief systems. And I think one of the things that is special about hip hop is that it came from a very specific time and place. Like it's from the Bronx, came on the heels of the civil rights movement and when the Vietnam War protests were starting up. But despite that particular context that it came from, rap music has trickled out and been influential in every part of the world, because those fights against racism and classism, unfortunately, are not unique to any one place. So one of the things that I'm really interested in is how hip hop has been absorbed by different cultures and what the messages are from those artists in every part of the world. My next big dream project for what I want to do with music, a project called The World of Rap. You know, I've been fortunate in my life to live in a few different places. I spent a couple of years in Mongolia in the Peace Corps. And when you have a different historical tradition, you have a whole different set of political challenges. And seeing how those come out in music is fascinating to me. In Mongolia, for example, you have a ton of investment into the gold and copper and coal mining industries. So in the capital city, Ulaanbaatar, you have like Gucci and Versace stores coming up, all these big skyscrapers. And then in its own version of gentrification, like people get pushed out to these ghettos full of yurts where like in some cases there's really high crime rates or there's not clean water and people are struggling. And so there's a rapper that I love called Quizza who raps in Mongolian. So like I can understand some of it and enough to get the gist of what he's saying. And I think that like it's really deep. And so the concept for this record is basically to make an album where every song is a title of a different country. And the track would be produced by people from that country with instruments from that country and feature rappers and singers and other artists telling stories from where they come from, because I believe in hip hop to be such a powerful purveyor of knowledge and wisdom. And then my role would really just be as a collaborator or maybe as a narrator, somebody like kind of tying the whole project together.
So you're trying to be like hip hop David Attenborough over here?
Hip hop, David Attenborough, hip hop, Anthony Bourdain, you could say.
Yeah. You and I, we live in London. We're American guys. We have grown up on the American style of hip hop, still listen to a lot of it.
Yeah.
Obviously, England has a really rich hip hop scene here.
Yeah.
Garage music, and especially when you get into like reggaeton and stuff, it's also huge in sort of that same mind frame. France, amazing hip hop scene.
Totally.
I sent you a couple of really dope Indian things.
That was amazing. Yeah.
What are the top three non-American countries for your like hip hop mind? Like when you listen to that music, you're like,
yeah,
sure. I don't know any German, but like I love what they're doing in Austria, for example. And that maybe that's just an example, but
it's funny you mention Germany, because I think they have a really interesting hip hop scene right now. I lived in Germany for a bit, and one of my roommates was a German rapper. As you can probably guess, the two of us got along well.
were you rapping when you were roommates?
Yeah. Okay. Like I would rap in English and he would rap in German, and
we
would
go back and forth. Do you ever put anything down together?
You know, it probably exists somewhere. I gotta dig that up from the vaults.
Wherever you are, German roommate rapper of friend of Joe's, please send us what you have.
Shouts out to Axel Bowman. He lives in Austin, Texas. I haven't talked to him for a while, but I gotta get back in touch with him. Axel actually brought me to all these clubs where there was live hip hop, and it was like punk music. I mean, hip-hop to me is like modern punk, because people are not dressing the way that they're told to dress. It, in some cases, is like aggressive. It represents pain. It's protest music, right? So I would say like Germany, I would go with Kenya, because I love the way that dancehall music is played in a lot of parts of Africa. And then honestly, man, the UK, like grime is having a big moment right now, especially with artists like Drake who recognized that. And like he did a track with Dave, I think, like Slow Ties, an up and coming artist that I love. The message from a lot of grime artists like Stormzy, too, is that the world doesn't necessarily understand yet struggles in racism and in classism as it exists in the UK, because it's not as culturally mainstream to talk about yet.
The origination of hip hop in the US was, you know, breakdancing music and taking the breaks from disco, basically, right?
Yeah.
So it's sort of like a throw in the face of all the disco people who like only had a couple good beats and never anything you could dance to. And then it became this monster of what it is. What will people take from today's music, in your opinion, to make the next form of hip hop?
Yeah, it's a good question. Like, sort of where is hip hop going?
Yeah.
Well, you know the concept in physics that for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that the political trends globally right now are not going to be represented in manifestations of music. So I'm talking about Brexit. I'm talking about Trump. I'm talking about the fact that there are like more than 30 populist governments around the world right now. And the equal and opposite reaction is like on a grassroots level, what that music will look like. And I think you can find some of that in like hip hop and punk music coming out of places like Russia as well. I think that the torchbearers who have gone from, you know, Tupac to Kendrick, I think that there's something coming.
There's maybe a Woodstock meets hip hop genre mix that's going to happen. Like that sense of protest against what we're in front of might manifest in hip hop now.
Totally. And even in politics, too. So like for our generation, hip hop is, for the first time in history, the most widely streamed music in the world. And we're coming of age to a point where the people running for political office, like AOC already, right, are going to be like our age and are going to be hip hop fans. To me, it'll be interesting to see like this intersection of pop culture and politics at the same time, because I think that the spirit and the message of hip hop is related to social change in so many ways.
That was a story all about the time my guest Joe Wheeler learned how to rhyme. And if you thought what you heard was fly, I've added in a link to his Spotify. I apologize profusely for that terrible attempt at rapping. I will leave it to the experts. But given Joe's energy, I felt like that might have worked a little bit. Thanks so much to Joe for joining me. I love to get deep with somebody who has a craft that they're mastering, because there's so much more to their game than we realize. And as I said at the jump, and during our conversation, rarely do you get someone skilled who is just contented with their ability. Joe, like many others, is still trying to strive, and I hope he gets there, because I'm genuinely excited to see him take off. If you want to hear more of his music, you want to look up some of the artists that we've talked about, I'll link some of it in the show notes so you can browse through those gems.
And a note, post my original recording. Now is the time, since you're locked in, to really try something new. That's what I got when I re-listened to the conversation with Joe. Get into some new music, refresh a playlist, try to scratch a creative itch. You might never have this much time again to really explore what's on your mind and what your own depths are. So why not give it a whirl? What else have you got to lose?
That's it for today's story. If you liked what you heard and want to hear more, you can subscribe to get the latest updates anywhere you get your podcasts. And if you have a moment and you're feeling generous, please leave a review. I'd really appreciate it, and it helps me understand how to make this show even better. For more info on me and this concept, you can visit our website at onesimplequestion.co. One Simple Question is hosted by me, Abhishek Lahoti. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you tune in again soon, and bye for now.